morning, everybody. It's nice to be here once again. I was going to talk to you today about free will, about conscious volition. In fact, I had most of my sermon written. This was one of those times where I did not wait till the last minute to write it. But then I learned that a family member had passed away after a two-year battle with cancer. She 9 months after her wedding day, she's passed away. So I find myself filled with contradictory feelings, and that's what I'd like to talk about today, if I may. I believe in healing. I believe in miracles, and I believe that I was bending the universe to my will. As you've heard me talk about here on several occasions before today, I believe that we inherit our creative ability from God. We were made by God. Out of the only stuff available before anything was created, which was God himself or herself, whichever pronoun you prefer, the infinite intelligence. And so we are a part of God, and that means we don't need to earn his love or favor or his grace. And we don't need to earn forgiveness. And we don't need to pay back for our sins. And we don't need to earn health. 3 weeks ago, this family member, my cousin, was admitted to the hospital. We were told she wouldn't be coming out. She had 2 days to live, maybe. And I refused to believe it. And every day, with the power of my mind and my faith, I applied my creative ability. At times it felt like slowing down a speeding train by digging my heels into the sand. Slowly, slowly hauling this trajectory to a stop so I could turn it and send it in another direction. Towards health. And it worked for a while. My cousin lived for 3 weeks. She did go home to her parents' house. So I had some partial success. And that's where these contradictory feelings came up. I didn't know that it was possible to have two such profoundly contradictory feelings at the same time. To feel disappointed and angry, but also to feel confident that God keeps his promises, to feel safe and secure, and feel really betrayed at the same time. One part of my mind, one voice in my mind, wonders, is this all bullshit? This creative inheritance, this promise that Jesus said to us that everything he does, we can do and more. Did I not believe enough? And yet another part of my mind remains convinced that I did everything in my power. And even though she failed to recover miraculously, on some level, maybe one I can't quite yet imagine, some other profound healing has taken place. When she lived past her original 2-day diagnosis to 3 days, prognosis to 3 days, to 4 days, to 1 week, to 2 weeks, I felt victorious. I was growing in confidence. And I began to believe more fully in the power, this creative power. Yet somewhere here, that nagging voice just kept repeating, "You always knew you couldn't do that. That's what you get for thinking so highly of yourself." And that voice speaks from my mind, from my ego, from my personality. And this part is familiar with and comfortable with shame, derision, mockery, sarcasm. This is the part that says, "Who the hell are you?" And that ego, that voice, is like an undertow that drags ceaselessly at my spirit's voice, which says, "You do have the power. You are divine. You are a holy child of God. You can create miracles. Pay attention to me over here, not that other voice." So I was entertaining these two voices simultaneously, the voice of my faith and the voice of my mind. Both seemed equal in volume. And I bounced between the two of them, first indulging one and then the other, another third part of me broke away and began to observe this process, observe me entertaining these two voices. Let me give you a little backstory here. I have a client in Israel, and we often trade services. I do readings for her, and she practices a modality called somatic experiencing. And it's astonishing stuff, this SE. And she taught me about this third part that can step away from the inner dialogue, from the inner traumas, and observe without judgment, just with curiosity. She tells me it's normal for the sensation meter in our brain, the oldest part of our brain, to flip-flop between what she calls, what somatic experience labels the trauma vortex and the health vortex. Uncomfortable sensation and comfortable sensation, negative voice and positive voice. It's normal, that's what we do, just we're built that way to bounce between these two. And when we can step away from that, when we're not so in it one at a time, but we can step away and observe it without judgment, but just with curiosity, we are able to release more of the trauma vortex. And we'll always go back and forth, but the trauma vortex will have less of a suck us in less. And since my cousin's passing on Thursday, I've observed myself flip-flopping between these two vortices, I don't know what that word is. And because of this client's coaching, I've been able to observe this, for the most part, without judgment, without saying, I should be stronger in my faith, or I should have known I couldn't have done that. And it's an interesting place to observe oneself from, this vantage point. And when I began When I could get there, I began to truly understand on a deeper level the real meaning of the law of mental equivalence. Anyone ever heard of this law? The law states that we can demonstrate to the level of our ability to know, and we cannot go beyond this. In other words, I can create a miracle to the degree in which I believe that I can. No more. If I could create the mental equivalent of walking on water in myself, I could walk on water. If I could create a mental experience first in which I could actually know myself to be able to walk on water, physically I could walk on water. A mental equivalent is like a mental bucket. It can only receive as much as it can hold. There might be a lot more water out there that wants to get in this bucket, but if your bucket's only this big, that's all that it can hold. We create these mental buckets, for lack of a better word, subjectively. Each one of us is unique and personal in the way that we do that. But it must begin in the mind. Our ability to receive must begin in the mind. And the law of mental equivalence is not a force of will. It is not the law of attraction. It is not affirmation. It is not visualization. It's something beyond conviction, even. It's knowledge and acceptance and absolute utter belief. And if I'm honest with myself, which I really only ever am when I'm standing up here at the microphone, the truth is, I didn't have that level of acceptance while I leaned on my faith. I know that my mind's voice was still whispering there, even though it was way in the background, I told you you couldn't perform a miracle. I did not have the mental equivalent of my cousin's miraculous healing. I had the desire, and I had the hope, and I had the wish, and I had the picture, and I had the force of will, but I did not have the mental equivalent. I hadn't created a receptacle vast enough so I couldn't receive it for her. Now, for a moment, I was poised on the threshold of real guilt here until the voice of my faith said, nah, just a minute. It's not me, my personality, my ego that creates that. It's the spirit of God within me. That's what fills the bucket. That's what does the work. So before I set out attempting to heal anybody else, I would do better to heal myself by creating a larger home for God in my life, or the Spirit of God in me. Not too long ago, I spoke here to you wonderful people about the prodigal son, and I've gone back to that parable recently because it seems to represent for me those two voices and that third vantage point. Let me tell you about it again, but this time, when I tell you about it, I want to focus on the son who stays home. He doesn't get top billing, but he's got a very important role in this parable. It goes like this. A certain man has two sons. The younger son comes to the father and says, "Give me the portion of goods that falls to me. Give me my inheritance." And the father does so, not just to the younger son, but to his elder son as well. He just divides up his estate. And we all know that the parable son goes off into the world and blows it all. Once he realizes he's hit rock bottom, the prodigal son is filled with woe and shame, and he knows and he understands the only choice I have is to go back home, throw myself at my father's feet, beg for mercy, and plead with him that he will give me a job that a slave has. However, we also know from the parable that as he approaches the home, the father sees him and runs out to greet him and tells the servants, "We are going to have a party. So kill the fatted calf, bring out all the best wine, all the best food, and let's start to feast." The elder son, is working in the fields at this time, and he sees this to-do, and he comes into the house, and he sees what's going on, and he gets angry. And his father says, "Come on in, your brother's home, let's have a party." And the elder son says, no. Why does he get all this stuff? Why does he get the fatted calf? I was a good son. I stayed home. I worked for you. I didn't challenge you. I didn't ask for anything. I was out in the fields every single day. I was earning my inheritance. And yet this guy goes off and blows everything, and he comes home and you're celebrating. He gets the fatted calf, he gets the best robes in the house, he gets the finest wine. How come when I wanted to have a party with my friends, I didn't even get a small goat? And the father says, "Everything I have is yours. All you had to do was ask." Now, we know that the father in the parable represents God. And we know that the sons represent free will. Each one of those sons represents our freedom to choose that God gave us. And what's so beautiful about this story is that as we turn to God, God rushes to greet us. He doesn't condemn us. He doesn't say, "I told you so, you lousy kid, never amounted to anything." And neither the father in the parable nor God, our father, our parent, requires his errant child to earn his way back in to the father's love. And as the father in the parable says, and as God says to us, "Everything I have is yours. All you have to do is ask." And I see in me, in the past few days, precisely this parable. The voice of my faith which says, "Let me have my inheritance now. Let me create miracles too." And the voice of my mind which says, "No, this is actual life in the world here. It's labor, it's obeying rules, it's working hard, it's hardship, it's earning your abundance. That's reality. Sickness, grief, death, taking, you know, getting what you pay for. This is life. The observer, as I call it, this other vantage point, is the Spirit of God in me which recognizes that all I have to do is ask. And ask knowing, not just believing, but knowing that it will be given to me. That's the divine in all of us. The part of us who watches without judgment, knows we have free will, and our conscious volition defines for us our environment, our experience, and our capabilities, whether it comes to earning money or creating miracles or healing. Never condemns us, never warns us, never rejects us. And the law of mental equivalence is knowing that it's there. All that we need, all that we desire is there. We don't have to earn it. We don't have to fight for it. We don't have to beg and plead and pray for it. But we have to be able to receive it. We have to ask for it, and we have to have the ability to receive it. A lot of that means believing we're worthy enough and we are great enough, and drowning out that voice that says, who the hell are you? You can't do that. I had a minister tell me that once. Those are the words she used, actually. I told her that I was, it's a long story, but she asked me what I did for a living, and I told her that I'm a medium. And she said, oh, and she kind of stepped away like this. And I said, well, 40% of the Bible's prophecy. I started throwing out these facts to defend myself, And I said, Jesus said I could do all of these things. And she said, oh dear, he wasn't talking about you. A minister. But that voice, we all have that, don't we? Like, you can't do that. You barely got through high school, or you've been divorced, or you made bad choices. You're not special. Who the hell are you? And we all have that voice. In Matthew chapter 13, verse 12, we read, whoever has, to him shall be given, and he shall have more abundance. But whosoever has not, from him shall be taken away even that which he has. To those who don't understand that, that seems downright unfair. Those who have a lot get more. The rich get richer. Those who don't have anything, barely two nickels to rub together, that's going to be taken away from them too. But look at this in the light of understanding the law of mental equivalence. Subtle reality that's hidden, but a very important part of the creative process. What Matthew is saying is, unless I conceive of myself as possessing good things, I cannot possess good things. Unless I allow on all the levels of my mind that I can create healing, I cannot create healing. Not the kind of healing that I wanted to create last week. My cousin, by her passing, has given me a great gift. She's pointed the way to healing with the first step, well, actually probably the only step I need to take. So maybe we can all do this together as we go through the next several days, longer if you like. In honor of those we've lost to heaven, in honor of those we couldn't heal, we couldn't save, in honor of those unfulfilled expectations, those non-starters, those lost opportunities, those missed chances. Let's keep in mind that the gift of our free will, oh, I did get around to this topic, after all, is the key to creating miracles in our lives. We must choose to expand our self-understanding. We must choose to create a vessel in our minds to receive. It's already out there. We must believe we are worthy of all that we desire, and even more than that. No matter how far we imagine we've strayed, God will run to greet us, to say, yes, make room for me. Everything I have is yours. God is ready to give us all that we desire, and he already has, yet we have to meet him halfway. And we have to be willing and able to receive. Amen.